Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. All right, gentlemen, are you geared up? We have the two biggest weeks of gaming and comics back to back.
Oh my God, we're going to die.
So,
3 weeks, we will sleep.
Yes.
But for now, we must game and comic.
Yes. Crom, I have never afraid you before.
Today we comic, tomorrow we die.
So this weekend, this Saturday, is International Tabletop Day, which has always been a big day for us, but is going to be even bigger this year because we're going to be live streaming it on Twitch on our new TV.
Yeah.
We are going to have we are a preferred partner this year, so we've got a lot of extra bonus stuff. We'll have giveaways and that kind of thing, and then we will have basically demos from 12:30 until we close at 9. Assuming
is this the most we've had? I feel like it's the most we've done.
This is the most we've had
as far as demos.
Yeah. So what we're running, and I'm going to run down the schedule real quick. You're going to find all this info over on our website and our Facebook page. But 12:30 to 1:30, we'll be running Castle Panic and Awesome Kingdom. 12:30 to 2:30, we'll be running Red Dragon Inn for as many people as want to play. 1:30 to 2:30, we'll be running Boss Monster and Epic Spell Wars. 2:30 to 4 o'clock, we'll be running Birds of a Feather, Takanoko, and Machikoro. 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock, we'll be running Star Realms, probably about three tables with the DC deck building and Splendor. And then from 6 to 9, I'm very excited about this, we're going to run a Super Fight tournament where the champions each table will play a final tournament for a prize, and the winner and the runner-up will get the Geek and Sundry Super Fight deck.
Ooh.
So, and that's not the deal. There's prizes and for a lot of these games. In many cases, it's participation. So if you show up and play the demo, you'll get a limited card or something like that.
Yep, and we have a listing of what those prizes are along with the schedule.
Yep.
But it's cool.
It's cool. So, come on out for that. It's going to be a ton of fun, and really excited for it. And then next week is Free Comic Book Day.
What's the deal with that? I don't know anything about that.
Well, they're free comics.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's actually we've actually got our copies. We're sitting next to about 16 boxes worth of comics back here.
We're crammed.
Dave and Nick and I have been perusing. It's taking us a while, but we are going through the offerings. And next week on the podcast, just in time, we will be bringing you our take on the various comics. But for now, I mean, know for sure that there's a Civil War II prologue. There's the prologue to Captain America Steve Rogers. There's an all-new, all-ages Dark Horse comic.
You know, I'm going to give a specific shout-out. I know we'll talk about it next week to that Dark Horse one.
Yeah.
The Serenity story in it, / Firefly, very much reminded me of an homage to the old Kitty's fairy tale from X-Men.
Yeah.
It's River telling a story to Zoe's kid.
Zoe Wash's kid,
You know, kind of like who's probably too young to hear it, but... Yeah. Basically, it's a sort of a recap of the adventures of the crew in a fairy tale style.
It was great.
It's very charming. Yeah. It's beautifully drawn. For sure, everybody pick up the Dark Horse one.
Yep. And then, on May 21st, we'll be having our Gaming with Rogues. We have not made our selection yet, but you should know about that very soon. If you don't know the deal on Gaming with Rogues, basically on Saturday night, the third Saturday of every month, you come in the store, you play games. We always have a selection that you can play, but you can also play from our demo library. And the selection, if you have a rogue card, is 10% off for the month.
Yep.
Our
store friend, Chris Jones, runs that, and he's a great guy, and it's a really good crew of people he's assembled who out there to play games. I think anybody could just walk in and find something fun to do.
Absolutely. Then on May 24th, we have our big midnight release for DC and Marvel.
Yep.
That is going to be the launch of DC Rebirth, as well as some other comics. Marvel's launching all of their stuff that week, so it'll be a big, basically, New Comics Day on Tuesday night at midnight.
Yep. We know it's going to be exhausting for us, but I am looking forward to it. I think it's going to be cool.
Yeah, we're all going to have been here a long time. So if any of us are speaking in tongues, that's why. But it should be fun. We're going to do DC deck building game that night. We'll probably have some fun stuff running on the TV. It'll be a fun night. We'll start that all at 9 o'clock when the store usually closes. And then
it's going to be a bumpin' house party.
Bumpin' house party. then this is exciting. On June 7th, Tuesday, June 7th, we'll be closing the store a little early, probably about 7. But if you are coming out for ladies' night that night, which will start at 7, from about 7:30 to 8, Kelly Sue DeConnick, writer of Bitch Planet, among numerous other things, creator of the new Captain Marvel, is going to Skype in on the Store TV and chat with our readers for about half an hour.
That's so cool that we were able to pull that off.
So that is super cool. And if that, hopefully that'll all work out fine. And if that all works, we will probably do more of these kind of things in the future with other creators and probably for Reading with Rogues and that kind of thing.
Our
so
TV is already up to cool tricks.
Yes. So that is, put that on your calendar for Tuesday, June 7th. If you don't usually come out for Ladies Night, but you want to, it'll be a lot of fun if you're one of the ladies.
Yes.
If you're a guy, sorry, you don't get it on this one.
But we'll probably do some other stuff.
But we'll do cool stuff.
Yeah, later. I think this is kind of our test drive, and yeah, if it goes well, we'll do more stuff.
And then June 18th is Free RPG Day, where we'll have a variety of RPGs to give away. That's like fifth or sixth year
running. How much free stuff can we give away? What are we crazy?
Yeah, we're crazy. I'm crazy.
Free RPG Day, yes.
Yes, and then June 14th, the Tuesday before Free RPG Day, will be our Reading with Rogues, our new bi-monthly reading club. Come out and discuss comics. We had a good time doing that this month.
Yeah, that was super fun.
And
the new bi-monthly schedule seemed to bring out more people.
Yeah, well, and it's sort of more of a casual thing where if you haven't read the books, you can still come out and talk comics.
Yep. We had a couple folks show up a little bit late.
Yeah, which is fine.
They only read one of the books, which was fine. And we chatted other stuff with them too, you know.
But we'll be talking our books, our selections for May and June, and the selection for May, which will go into effect, I believe, this Sunday. No, yeah, this Sunday.
Okay,
is Doctor Strange the Oath, the Brian K. Vaughan, Marcos Martin, fantastic Doctor Strange story.
Maybe the best standalone Doctor Strange comic that one would be able to find on the shelves at all right now.
Really good. If you want to get it, starting on May 1st, you'll be able to get it for 15% off, or if you have a rogue card, 25% off. So
are we crazy? What's going on?
There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I know. Jesus.
All right. On to the news. And there's a lot of news this week. We're going to try and get through it. First of all, I want to talk about the Magnificent Seven trailer.
Yeah.
That was good.
It looked all right.
Nick, where do you come down on this?
No, I think it looked good. It was very heavy on Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably done with in mind.
Deliberate?
That dude,
it was very deliberate.
That dude may have a future in the film industry.
Yeah, you think?
I mean, you know, it's funny, I'm not actually the biggest fan of the original Magnificent Seven. I like some classic westerns. That one is just kind of on my list.
You mean the remake?
Yeah. Itself a remake, of course, of Seven Samurai. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm also not a huge Magnificent. I'm not sure I've seen it.
Yeah. It's got a famous theme song from, was it that guy?
Yeah, I know
Elmer
theme song.
Bernstein.
Yeah,
you're more a Wild Bunch kind of guy.
I am more of a Unforgiven kind of guy.
Yeah, okay.
So I have not seen a huge ton of westerns. I've corrected a little bit in later years, but I've definitely have not seen a lot of the classic Clint Eastwood. Never seen a John Wayne film all the way through, I don't think.
No.
Okay. No Gary Cooper. I'm not a big western guy. I mean, I like the genre, but never done a lot of the shows. So.
Ryan, are you going to tune in on this one?
But this one looks good. What I do love, and the reason I love, say, like Silverado or what's Tombstone, is a good ensemble piece, no matter what the setting.
Yeah.
And Denzel Washington,
Chris Pratt,
Vincent, who else?
Vincent D'Onofrio,
Ethan Hawke. That's a good cast. I'm all in for that. So let's also remember Antoine Fuqua was responsible for Training Day. And also Replacement Killers. So really, we don't know which way this is going to go.
Uh-oh. Honestly, yeah. I think Replacement Killers was very early.
It might have been his first movie after music videos.
He definitely has changed and gotten a little better.
I'm just saying, when you get Replacement Killers on your resume, you always have a little black mark against it.
That's right. That was Trevino and Chow Yun-Fat.
I know. And it still was terrible.
It was pretty bad.
All right. More movie news. This one, I don't have any fondness for Power Rangers at all.
Oh, yeah.
But I do love Elizabeth Banks.
Yeah, it was too late for me.
And Elizabeth Banks is playing Rita Repulsa, the villain of the Power Rangers movie.
I don't have a love for it. I actually got to the point where I loathed it when it came on.
Sure.
Because my friends all loved it, they were watching it.
And they were all monsters.
And you're like,
they
were into G.I. Joe people.
Yeah, I'm pretty much. No, and I've come around since Boom started putting out the comics. They've actually been really good.
Okay.
So this was interesting.
So you're in a Power Rangers mood?
I'm in a Power Rangers mood. So
as
it was
much
fun,
as you're gonna?
It was fun to see her dressed up as a sort of new take on Rita Repulsa. Yeah.
She definitely seemed less repulsive than the witch of the show that I remember. I know that stirred up some internet people who are like, because the show for sure has a strong fandom.
Yeah.
I have no idea if that means that the whole movie is going to be a crazy rethink.
I imagine that the
or that they were just like
completely different.
Hey, let's just not have a crazy hag woman.
Well, the thing is, she can play weird looking. I mean, she, in Hunger Games,
yeah,
she plays this sort of weirdly over makeuped girl, and Elizabeth Banks is great at comedy and sort of physical comedy. So I think she's going
to
be a good person.
She'll still be able to chew up the scenery.
Yes. Totally seems like the kind of thing she
can do. I do believe that is the one thing that character, the what little Power Rangers knowledge I have, is that she should command the screen when she's on it.
And I agree.
And be bonkers, just utterly bonkers.
Speaking of properties I have little fondness for just because I haven't watched them, Farscape is getting a movie.
Yeah.
Which is,
haven't they been getting a movie for the last decade?
Apparently it's officially happening now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I seem to remember that this is the director that said it's happening, and I don't necessarily even trust him. I need to find out that it's got a date, and it's got a studio release, and all that.
We should have dragged Amanda back here for this, because I believe she's a big Farscape fan. But, Dave, you've watched a fair amount of it, right?
No, just a little bit of it.
Oh, really? Okay. I watched the first two episodes, I think.
Yeah, I liked what I saw, but I was just, I was like, I'm not quite in the, it wasn't quite in the mood to, like, throw myself into, like, watching five or six seasons or whatever it lasted.
That's where I was, too.
It'll be interesting, because I haven't watched a ton of it, but I watched a lot of, this was the, had the Jim Henson stuff.
The puppets, yeah.
The puppets.
Yeah, it was created by Rockne S. O'Bannon, sci-fi guy from the, did a lot of stuff in the 80s. As it happens, through a weird series of circumstances, I was remembering that he, I think it was like a sort of a editor or whatever on the new Twilight Zone of the
80s. Yeah, that's right.
Wrote. I watched one or two episodes that I happened to see that he did a lot of the teleplays for him. But he's probably best known for Alien Nation.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
He kind of writes a sort of mainstream sort of sci-fi.
Yeah.
It's usually got some catchy hooks and stuff to it.
Yeah.
But some serious emotion behind it.
Farscape is on the list for me of, here's something I know I'd probably like if I had the time to throw myself into it.
Yeah. And a standalone movie, or I don't know if it's supposed to conclude their stories.
I think it's probably a conclusion type thing, yeah.
But they're going to have to do it a bit like Serenity, because it's been so long since it wrapped. It's got to be able to stand on its own, too.
That's true.
Which I think you could do pretty easily. You know, this guy's like a slightly craggier, slightly older Earth. I know he's basically a human, a dude from modern times flung into crazy like alien space.
Yeah, it's like through a wormhole or...
A sort of more, in not introspective, but a sort of more thought-through version of, like, the Flash Gordon concept. Yeah. You know, this guy suddenly in the middle of, like, alien war, and, you know, there was a lot of Monster of the Week episodes, or sort of standalones, too, but, you know, bigger plot threads about, you know, wars and stuff.
Right.
Plus puppets,
yeah. It did have fun puppetry, and you know, in an era when that's coming back a little bit because of Force Awakens,
yeah.
They could actually, I could actually see them somewhat returning to that.
But, yep.
Yeah, I would say mildly interested. You know, okay. I hope it comes off well for the fans.
All right, let's turn to Marvel movie news.
Yeah.
Okay.
First, the good news: Nathan Fillion has been cast as Wonder Man in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Nick knows a little more about this than me because he's done some Googling, but we're not going to talk about that.
Right.
It is weird as hell to me, by the way, that a movie that has not even finished shooting, maybe?
I think it's midway through production, if I'm not mistaken.
There are already spoilers out for the movie that is not even finished shooting yet, that won't be out till next year. The people already know bits and pieces of what's... That's crazy to me.
Well, I mean, you know, it's how like, do they know about it?
I think the script must be out there, or word about what he's doing.
I mean, they're filming right now, so a lot of people get on location... photos.
Yeah.
And
I guess that's kind of what Harry Knowles used to do back like 20 years ago when Cool News was first getting off its feet.
I just don't understand why would you want to do that? Why would you? It's like the opposite of our trailer blockade.
Sure. And well, I think
in a lot of ways, I think you have to sort of see it from their point of view. It's like they're filming in whatever location you happen to be there.
Yeah.
You want to get a shot and you've posted it and it goes viral.
No, I understand the posting.
Yeah.
I don't understand the audience that makes the posting a thing. I don't understand wanting to find out ahead of time.
It's like you're putting together a puzzle. It's an opportunity to be the first among sort of your geek crowd.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
So that if they too are interested, you're like, hey, I found this out first.
See, I love like speculating a little bit, and I like making guesses. But the more you know, the less fun it is for me.
And part of that for sure may be, you know, coming from pre-internet generation, where that was just less of an appeal.
You can say it, Dave. I'm old.
Hey, I feel the exact same way as you do.
I know, you're old too.
I did not want to know what the deal is with Wonder Man. He's one of my favorite weird superheroes. He's not that weird, but he's kind of a luckless superhero.
Yeah.
And for that reason, it was always kind of interesting that he was like, you know, almost Thor power level, but never really believed much in himself. You know, seemed to have these crises of confidence every once in a while. and I don't have no idea how much of that's going to make it to the screen, whether he's going to be like a complete rethink, how they're going to work him into sort of a sci-fi setting.
Yeah.
There's some interesting problems. I actually have confidence that they'll come up with a good solution.
I've always liked Wonder Man, not as much as you do, because I think he's one of your favorite, like, weird characters.
Yeah, I'd say favorite among my B-list characters.
I think Nathan Fillion is sort of perfect casting. In fact, when Nick was writing in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a short-lived fanfic thing we did, he cast basically Wonder Man as a Castle-esque actor doing onset.
He was basically had a deal with S.H.I.E.L.D. to sort of shadow them to figure out, like, mannerisms, because he was researching a role.
Which is how he got his powers.
That's how he got his powers.
Yep. Which is a fun take. And Nathan Fillion as Wonder Man seems like dream casting to me.
Yeah.
And putting him in Guardians is weird, but not super weird. I can definitely see it working.
Nathan Fillion was in the first Guardians, so it doesn't really shock me.
Well, his voice was in Guardians.
I mean, he was in one of the suits.
It was motion capture, yeah.
He's got some association, but yeah, he was not exactly plugged in as a key part.
Being good friends with James Gunn, I mean, he gets to...
But that is...
It's pretty cool.
That is crazy. It's kind of like we start hearing things like Cloak and Dagger's getting a show and all this kind of stuff, that they are delving into stuff I never thought we'd see.
Yeah. Yeah, Wonder Man is like... And honestly, in the big scheme, he's a C-lister.
It's
like
a deep cut.
Yeah,
it's a deep cut. So that's cool.
I mean, if they bring in D-Man, that's when my head's still going to pop.
And D-Man may be where Wonder Man is for you. D-Man would be fantastic.
I want to see Black Knight.
Black Knight would also be cool. That's not so far of a deep dive. I think that's possible.
Yeah, I actually feel like Black Knight could be done.
Yeah.
All right, Hercules or bust.
Hey, they got Thor.
Yep. All right. I can see Hercules in, like, Thor 4 if they were going to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. With some big titanic battles
between War of the
two
Pantheons.
Mythological dudes. Yeah.
All right. On the less good news, if you're an Inhumans fan, Inhumans has been pulled from the schedule again. And they're still making noises like they're going to do it, but...
You say so there's no Inhumans movie on this.
Inhumans movie is not on the schedule anymore. Who at this table believes that Inhumans movie is actually going to happen?
Nick is raising his hand. I actually have to say something. Dave, when we posted about this, he threw out the suggestion that if in Phase 4, which is possible, because Kevin Feige has gone on record saying it's completely different, they could do a Ms. Marvel movie, and that's how we learn about the Inhumans.
Yeah,
and I like that idea a lot.
I think that makes sense, too, except that I still don't think the Inhumans... The Inhumans is the weakest part of Ms. Marvel for me. I don't like the Inhuman. I don't like the Terrigen Mist.
The best thing is that it gets her lockjaw.
Yeah.
But, like, beyond that...
Yeah. The best thing is to get listed as lockjaw.
I actually think probably most people will react to this news with, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, you're saying that people don't really care about the Inhumans?
Yeah.
I was actually a little glad, because I honestly... Marvel only makes two movies a year, and I don't want one of them to be the Inhumans.
Yeah.
I've never been a fan.
Something that has a foot in icon status, or we know
if
is a good property
Spider-Man
like Guardians.
Now they're doing three a year.
Okay, that's fair. But still...
It's like one of those things, they could have pulled it off. You know, Guardians was a fairly unknown property. We knew it was good from the comics, but it was fairly unknown. They pulled it off. They probably could pull off Inhumans.
They probably could, but I don't really... I don't want them to try.
Now, Nick, do you... are you bothered by this, or do you think that it also was slightly dicey as a movie concept?
I don't think it was dicey as a movie concept. I think they could have gotten somebody involved in the story... Make it very Game of Thrones, like they said that they were toying with.
So you think it'd be the royal family and all that stuff? It wouldn't be like the new generation of Inhumans?
No, I think you do the classic ones. My
biggest issue with the Inhumans, the Terrigen Mist thing and all that, is I used to read the Milestone comics. And the Milestone comics, the way that the powers got started in that universe was there was a gas attack. There was like experimental gas that was deployed in a big gang war, and the police were involved. And so basically, if you got powers, you were at the Big Bang, which was this gas that activated your powers.
Cool concept.
And that's a cool concept. And I always felt the Terrigen Mist was like a secondary knockoff of that. And it was also the attempt to replace mutants, which also felt unnecessary. I mean,
I have to throw this out just as a technicality. I know it's not what you mean. Terrigen Mist, of course, existed before the Big Bang.
But they were not this.
Yeah, it was sort of like a ceremony where, you know, if you were an Inhuman, when you came of age or whatever, you went into a room.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were these jets of the mists and stuff like that, and you got your powers. It was not an Earth-encompassing
That's the thing. I think what Nick is saying, if they were doing a Game of Thrones-esque and it was about sort of the, you know, taking power and getting power as a child and what that does and the society and all that, that's a more interesting movie to me. What they're doing on S.H.I.E.L.D. right now, where, like, the Inhumans are just the Inhumans from the comics, I've never liked that concept. They've got Charles Soule writing. He's one of my favorite writers, and I'm not liking it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's not Soule's fault. That's on the Inhumans.
Honestly, I think you just have to sort of throw away all of what they've done on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show.
Yeah.
And sort of what they've done in Marvel Comics lately, and go back to
what they are, the Royal Family.
Yeah, the Royal Family, and sort of take it from there.
If they did it, it would have to be like a hidden community, right?
Yeah.
Like, because they have to have their own established, you know, laws and codes, and that way you can have their sort of royal houses duking it out.
Well, I wonder if they originally were going to backdoor this in Doctor Strange, because you know originally it was in the Himalayas or Tibet.
Yeah,
like it, that's that. Like if they had end of credits movie had seen the Inhumans.
Yeah.
That would have been the way to do it. And I wonder if basically the reason that this has fallen apart is that they started going a different way with the end of credit.
I wouldn't be shocked. And if they sort of do get around to the notion of maybe including Inhumans in Phase 4, is that we see some reference to them in Captain Marvel.
Maybe.
Because
the Kree. Yeah.
They're Kree creation as well. So
they're a creation.
Yes. You know, I could see that. I could also see them tied into a later Guardians movie. If something occurs on Earth's moon, because that's, of course, where the Inhumans end up eventually, even though they start in the Himalayas. As eventually they're like, there's too many people noticing us on Earth. Let's go to the moon.
Right.
So suddenly they become more sci-fi in that sense. And if they wanted them to play some role in that, hell, you could put them in Thor, and they could
put them in Guardians. Yeah, I mean, you can put them anywhere. Yeah.
But for now, they're putting them nowhere.
Yeah. And I do think that I'm not sure we'll ever see it. It is one of those weaker concepts. But anyway, all right.
You know what the coolest thing about the Inhumans is?
What's that?
Black Bolt.
Yeah.
And then Lockjaw.
And then Lockjaw. Yeah.
The rest of them I could take or leave.
All right. Two quick bits of news. Game news. Betrayal at House on the Hill is getting an expansion called Widow's Walk.
People are excited about this.
Man, people have been waiting a long time for an expansion to this game.
I was like, oh, maybe I should mention that on the stores page. And suddenly, like, everybody I know is, like, talking about it, asking to hold a copy.
Yep.
You know, I didn't realize how widely enjoyed the game was. I knew it was well-liked.
Yeah, it's beloved. It is, that is coming supposedly in October with game companies you never know. But that is coming supposedly in October.
I read up on it. And by the way, it sounds cool. There's like you can like go into the roof of the mansion now, and it's got new whole. There's going to be all sort of new areas to go to.
Okay,
it sounded really neat.
So yeah, so if you're a Betrayal House of the Hill fan, there is a new expansion coming.
Plus lots of new scenarios, I'm sure. Like I think it was like 20 new scenarios.
Very cool.
And then in comics news, and I'm always loath to mention something that we're going to make no money on this. This is not for us, but it's a cool comics thing, and that is Brian Vaughn and Marcus Martin have a digital site where they put Private Eye, which we eventually did get a print compilation of, and we do really like. But they part of the deal with them getting a print compilation of Private Eye was that they swapped The Walking Dead for a month.
Yeah.
So basically, there is a standalone Walking Dead story called Alien, written by Brian K. Vaughan, art by Marcus Martin. It is now available for pay-as-you-go at panelsyndicate.com.
The only non-Robert Kirkman written Walking Dead comic in existence,
yes.
I think.
Yep. And Kirkman has come out and said it's in continuity. I don't know what that means because I have it, but I haven't had a chance to read it yet. So, if you are a Walking Dead fan or a Brian K. Vaughan fan, and odds are if you're listening to this, you're one or both.
Yeah.
Go check that out.
Say, where is it again?
It is at panelsyndicate.com, and I'll put a link in notes. So, all right. There's other news, but we're going to skip that next week because it is a busy week and we want to get to comics. So we'll be back in just a minute to talk about comics for the week. We are talking new comics for the week of Wednesday, April 27th, and it's a pretty big week. I've got a lot of stuff in my stack, including a lot of graphic novels, but since I have a lot of stuff to talk about and you guys have less, I'm going to start with you guys.
All right.
With our flaccid selections.
No, you're just you're pickier than me.
Nick, you want to go first? Yeah, sure. I've gone the last one or two twice, I think.
Sure. I'm going to talk about a book we've talked about before, but why not talk about it again?
It's a jumping on point.
It is a jumping on point. This is Daredevil number 6. It starts the new Electric Connection storyline. Spelled Electric with like Electra with a K.
Or does it have a K? There we go. Okay.
Is that a pun on anything in particular? Like or a known name?
No.
Okay.
No,
that's a cool cover.
It's Sienkiewicz.
Yeah, it's Sienkiewicz.
Man, I think I still got it.
Yep.
It is cool because Daredevil, Electra is back in Daredevil's life. And it's kind of an odd, because this goes more into what Daredevil has been, you know, putting his identity back in the box. And
we still know how he did that.
We still know how he did it, but he did it, and it erased people's minds in sort of a weird Brand New Day style.
Yeah.
Which I'm kind of like reading it and being like, that's a little strange.
It's a little creepy, actually.
It's a little creepy. And
we know that he actually literally, that he did something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he outright says
he mentions
that
he did
something.
Well, you know, is it, you think it's going to be, Doctor Strange is so much in the spotlight lately, and he's one of the few guys I feel like who could do something like that.
I think it's possible. And Sula's friends, Sula's definitely leaving it as a mystery, like it's a deliberate mystery.
I mean, I feel like the answer to that question is coming at some point.
Maybe he went around to every single person in the world and punched them in the head until they forgot it.
That's an extreme form of amnesia.
Yes. Frank Miller's back on the book, Randy. Nick, what do we got?
For some reason at this point, Elektra is back, and she's not very happy with Daredevil.
Nope, and she doesn't know Matt and Daredevil are the same person.
Exactly.
That's huge if she doesn't know.
Yeah.
She does not know.
That's sort of the big thrust of the story.
So violence ensues, and...
actually, taking that away from her, like does that... do we know, if Foggy knows?
I
just immediately assume he was.
I think literally nobody but Matt knows.
Now, that is kind of interesting. That changes some things,
He's so by himself. He's so isolated except for his the person he's training.
And that's only Daredevil.
Matt is by himself. Which Sewell's put him in that kind of interesting place.
Yeah.
And is having a bit of fun with it, especially because even he doesn't react the same way in certain situations.
Yeah, there's definitely a sense that Elektra knows something, but that she doesn't know. Like, she knows something was done to her, I think.
Yes.
She knows Daredevil. Yeah.
And there's a big thing at the end that is very cool.
Yeah.
I need to read this issue.
Yeah, it was really good.
However, I want to talk about the art.
Because
It has been Ron Garney, and Ron Garney is amazing.
Yep.
But this artist is Matteo Bufagini?
Bufagni.
And I've heard that name before. I know in one of our reviews we've mentioned him at some point. But he very much has something in line with Chris Samnee.
It's spectacular.
It is spectacular. I think his action is fantastic. It just kind of moves and it's very organic.
Watching this, what looks like, I see somebody, I don't even know if it's Matt, tangling with Elektra.
It's Matt.
And it looks like a brutal fight.
Yeah.
It's brutal. And I just think it's very easy on the eyes. You don't ever have to sort of guess
there's
where
no
the panel alignments are
going. Right.
No, it's very much there.
His Elektra take is really good, too.
And even just the stuff with just Matt and Elektra in there, just plain clothes, conversational mode is very interesting. And
It's interesting, Nick. You mentioned Samnee, and I see more of a Alex Maleev and realistic type vibe to it.
I see that, but there's a little bit of, I don't know, there's a smoothness that isn't there in a Maleev.
Yeah, but it's really good.
Yeah,
yeah. There's also weirdly a little bit of jock even.
Yeah.
Regardless of who you see, it is amazing artwork to behold.
Or that dude who does Black Panther. I can't see his name.
Oh, Brian Stelfreeze.
Okay. I see that.
It's
more
got
than
some
I do.
Of his noir shadows.
Yeah, and still playing with those colors that Garney was using,
which I like a lot.
I think it is a fantastic issue. It's a great jumping on point. And it will probably make you want to pick up the trade that is coming out pretty soon as well. So,
yeah, I've been really liking that run, and I was impressed with that
issue. But haven't picked it up yet. This seems like this would be an excellent issue to check it out.
Yes. Yeah, and I don't think you don't have to have read the previous story arc.
No, you don't.
If you're curious about Daredevil Elektra, you could jump right in on this.
Yes, I agree.
Dave, what you got?
I have the first issue of IDW's relaunch of the Micronauts. I believe the only time that this series has been revamped since the 80s.
Yeah.
Let's say it's never had a revamp.
Yeah.
It ended in the 80s for Marvel.
Yep.
It actually got one of those pretty fitting endings. It was it would be the equivalent of Return of the Jedi. The girls had a very hard-fought victory. I remember, this is one of those books where if you're not familiar with the Micronauts, it was a Japanese toy line that kind of crossed over into America. I think it may have even been one of those where the American toys were actually several different toy lines from Japan kind of mashed together.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And Marvel got the comic rights in the late 70s, and they published what was shockingly a good comic.
Who was that? Bill Mantlo?
Bill Mantlo, who did the same thing with Rom.
And Michael Golden on art.
And Michael Golden on art, which made it amazing.
Yeah.
It was told the tale of the Microverse, which had, essentially this space opera, very Star Wars influenced, but a little grittier at times even. But this is essentially, they were an alternate universe, though. The fact that they were microscopic to humans was kind of fun novelty, but most of the time it was just
didn't
as
matter,
if it was Star Wars.
Yeah.
The new series, they cannot use a lot of the original stuff that Marvel added, or really any of it.
Right.
They can use the same toys that inspired it. And I was kind of dubious going in, and I was surprised how much I enjoyed this. Maybe I shouldn't be, because Cullen Bunn wrote it, and yep. I liked him on
yep.
Magneto, and I'm trying to think what else he's done.
Sixth Gun,
of course, was his creator on yeah. thing. He's been writing something.
He's been writing a bunch of stuff. You liked Magneto, you liked, and yeah. I don't know.
He writes a lot of books.
That's
what I mean. Yeah, like, yeah, there's stuff that I don't read, Deadpool. But Deadpool is probably pretty notable.
He does a lot of the side stories.
And so this is sort of a rethink from the ground up with a lot of somewhat familiar designs. Like, you know, if you know Micronauts, you know the big bad in it. They're Darth Vader, basically, Baron Karza.
Yep.
Super scary, and in his way just as scary as Vader, in some ways even creepier.
He's a good bad guy.
He shows up in this. Interestingly, he's got like a consort in it, I guess it's just actually his wife.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's his wife.
And she's got a full-on like Lady Macbeth thing going on. They're kind of a scary couple in it. Huh. But what you have is a universe that is kind of like seems on the edge, because there is something, this entropic wave that's been destroying whole planets. And like, it's an accepted part of their life. Like, they know it's happening. And there's this kind of people who do like Deadpool bets on like when the next planet is going to go and yeah. stuff. Amidst that sort of chaos, it seems like sort of an unstable galaxy. You have a Firefly-esque ragtag crew. Led by characters that, you know, you'll recognize as, like, what was it, Space Glider, was, like, one of the
Acroyear, Biotron.
Yep, those are all in there. They're rethinks sort of the characters that you may know them as if you read the Marvel series, which you did if you were old,
yep.
Like me. And but they are pretty good rethinks. I feel like there's Star Wars influence in a different way. I'm going to mention the prequels, but not in the prequel writing sense. More in that sense of like the kind of the adventures on Coruscant and things like that, and the variety of aliens and stuff like that. It reminded me of that, but probably more of Firefly than anything else.
Okay.
And what you have is a group of adventurers who, you know, they're in over their heads in that sort of Han Solo or Mal from Firefly-esque way. And they get involved in sort of a bigger plot that does involve Baron Karza and definitely some bigger galaxy-shaking things. I kind of don't want to say too much about the plot, because I think this is one that's more fun to discover on its own. It's a very character-based sci-fi one. It has a really quite nice art from David Baldeon.
We were trying to remember where we know him from when I could not place it.
I do not know. It's new to me. But his style, it's a slightly stylized art. I feel like people who like Umberto Ramos or even Ed McGuinness will find something familiar about this. Who's the other guy on Spider-Man who's a little Ramos-esque but not?
Oh, Ramos.
You like
I don't
it
know.
Better, Randy.
It's not...
not Kevin Coley.
Stefano Caselli?
It might be Caselli.
Okay.
But anyway, the art is really good. I'm not 100% sure how other Micronauts fans will react to this, because you are not going to get exactly what you expected. It is a different kind of space opera.
Right.
But it's very well thought through, and you're going to get to see Acroyear and like other cool designs that you remember in sort of a new way. So I would say give the first issue a try. I think it's a pretty good effort.
Cool.
Randy, what is your pick?
All right, so my pick is a cheater pick. Double pick, because it's two issues.
They're linked thematically.
But they're linked thematically. So Doctor Strange, since Jason Aaron has been doing it, Jason Aaron and Chris Bacallo has been doing the Last Days of Magic. Basically, there's... and that is where... This week's issue number 7 is part 2 of that. But before you get into that, you want to read the Doctor Strange Last Days of Magic one-shot. Which, basically, all you need to know is that there's this monster from another dimension called Empirical. You know, Empirical.
Right. As if science...
He is anti-magic. He is trying to wipe out magic. He's been killing Sorcerer Supreme in various dimensions. And now he's come to our dimension and is trying to wipe out all the magic on Earth. So using the librarian that Doctor Strange recruited early on, as he was someone she helped in the early issues, she's helping to reorganize the library in the house, in the Sanctum Sanctorum. And using that as a framing device... There are several different stories of mages around the world in the Marvel Universe. And these are, for the most part, new characters. Brother / Dr. Voodoo does appear, written by Jerry Duggan, who is, I believe, doing a new Dr. Voodoo series soon.
Yeah, and he's also the writer behind Uncanny Avengers.
Uncanny Avengers, where he's been using him.
And honestly, it's a fantastic short little one-off with Brother Voodoo.
Yeah, and James Robinson, who's been doing Scarlet Witch, creates a new Hong Kong mage. along with artist Mike Perkins, called The Woo, which I loved.
Yeah, she was cool.
But basically, this is a framing sequence where she's learning about some of the mages of the Marvel Universe as this empirical guy is going out to wipe them out.
And also, I just saw you just hit the is it the South American?
Yes, one? There is a, in Mexico, is El Medico Místico.
Yeah. He's cool as hell.
Yeah,
imagine sort of a luchador guy.
But it's also, he's like got a Dia de los Muertos kind of mask. Yeah, his luchador mask.
I'm totally gonna make.
And he's like wearing like a sort of almost a matador suit, right?
Yep.
I totally want to make an action figure of him.
Yeah, he's awesome.
You told me when I was kind of curious about it, you said it's like a tour of the Marvel magic users.
Essentially, yeah.
And it really is. I have not been reading Doctor Strange regularly, and I read that and really liked it.
Well, the framing sequence art is by Leonardo Romero, which reminds me very much of Chris Samnee stuff, which we keep saying everybody reminds us of Chris Samnee, which may just be a shortcut for it's good.
Yeah.
But this actually does remind me of sort of his sort of animated style, mm-hmm. clean line artwork. But then there are different artists for different runs. The Brother Voodoo one is, I don't even know how to place this style. It reminds me a little sort of Paul Pope, some of those guys a little bit, but it's really, really good stuff. And then,
Randy, who was that dude who did? This is a weird reference, but remember that Gollum based? That was a comic about a Gollum.
Yeah,
who was that artist? Phil Winslade.
Phil Winslade. Yeah,
it has a little bit of his kind of elongated style, and with realism mixed in there.
They also introduce a mystic sort of tied into Doctor Doom's backstory, which is a really fun little character. And like I say, the Hong Kong Mage. Is such a great little short story and such an interesting new character.
Yep.
I want a miniseries of this character. I want more of this character.
Can I say I want a little miniseries about the Siberian Seer?
The Siberian Seer is also great. Basically, there's like five or six new mages. They're all introduced in little short stories. Every one of these stories is a ton of fun. If you're at all a fan of the Marvel Universe and magic stuff, give this a look, whether you're reading Doctor Strange or not.
You know, way back in the early 80s, Marvel did Contest of Champions and had a rather... clichéd international heroes. Not exactly super sensitive. But beyond just that, they just weren't super cool. Yeah. Shamrock was an Irish chick who had luck powers. I mean, so it wasn't the best idea ever.
Yeah.
This is kind of what you... If you were developing international super teams...
Yep.
I felt like John Ostrander, when he did international superhero foes for the Suicide Squad to fight, did a great job.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is another good example of getting it right, I think.
And then the Doctor Strange number 7 that comes out this week has the origin of Empiricol, which is really good. And
the cover is creepy.
Yeah. He's got Doctor Strange's mask in his mouth like he's eating him.
He's basically eating
him. And then it has the first sort of gathering of the resistance of what's left of Earth's mages against Empiricol. I'm really liking this book. I think they finally found a way to make Doctor Strange sell to an audience, which has been a tough thing to do.
Uh-huh.
And I'm glad that this is coming out right when the heat is on the book, thanks to the trailer of the movie. So definitely worth checking out. I believe
you mentioned in one fell swoop. Should
I also mention the hardcover? As long as I'm cheating, the Doctor Strange hardcover is also out this week. It is called The Way of the Weird. It is it collects the first five issues of the Jason Aaron Chris Piccolo run. It's really, really good. I'm digging the hell out of this book. So. Definitely worth a look for you Doctor Strange fans. And then my cheater pick. Not that I've been cheating already. But Only Wolverine is back. Nick and I have been missing this book. It's been a little late. But I think part of it might be the artist getting wrapped up on other stuff, because this Only Wolverine number 7 is actually a standalone issue. It's got art by Marcio Takara, who I know the name. I don't remember. I can't quite place where he's from, but really, really nice art. And it features... Unbeatable Squirrel Girl coming to Wolverine to help her with something. And it's a lot of fun. It's basically a buddy cop movie where one of the cops is a girl dressed like a squirrel and talks to squirrels. And the other one is X-23, a.k.a. the new Wolverine. And
right, so you had a former mutant assassin and a girl who talks to squirrels.
Yep. And, I won't give away too much. It's a really fun book. It's also got the same heart this book's had from the beginning. But it does open with Squirrel Girl bringing an actual live Wolverine to Wolverine's place, because she assumes that Wolverine can talk to Wolverines.
Oh, right. That she would, just like her own power.
Just like her own power.
That's amazing. I'm going to have to read this issue, even though I have not been keeping up on
it. It's super fun, even if you're not keeping up with it. If you're a Squirrel Girl fan, definitely check out this week's All-New Wolverine. Dave, what's your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is a graphic novel, or a trade paperback. This is the first volume of Black Magic series that we've talked up several times as it was coming out in single issues. It's a Greg Rucka's kind of magic procedural is what I'm going to call it.
Yeah.
This is how I'm planning to kind of do my catch up on the book, because I missed an issue or two as it was coming out. It's one of those awesome $10 Image first collections.
Yeah.
So for $10, you're going to get the full first, what, like 5 issues or whatever.
Yep.
And this is, you know, we've told you that it's a lady cop who she's delves into magic in her spare time. It's definitely a world where magic is a real thing. She's a witch, seems like a benevolent one, and generally magic is not known to the world, though. Like, it exists, but most people don't know about it, and it becomes wrapped up in her case. There's something that calls her out in it. Beyond that, I say it's best enjoyed as an experience. You know, check out the mystery of it all. There's really beautiful art from Nicola Scott in it. She's always been a talented artist, but her doing this sort of super realistic noir look is a real testament to her skills. Maybe the best art I've seen from her overall. I think anybody who likes supernatural stuff, including, yes, the show Supernatural.
Yep.
But if you like a supernatural mystery and you're looking for sort of a real world spin on it, check out Black Magic Volume 1.
Nick?
My secondary pick is the finale, the Omega issue of Avengers Standoff, Assault on Pleasant Hill.
I was surprised to see that series was already ending. I kind of thought we were due for like another month or two of Standoff stuff.
I like that it was basically a quick, and this is kind of what they're doing with Spider-Women and some of Marvel's other crossovers, is the
quick crossover.
Get it, you know, it's one story, get it done. Yep. Civil War 2 is going to be the opposite. It's going to be the big sprawling story, which there's place for both.
Yes. And this one is quick. It does see sort of the Cosmic Cube young girl, whatever you want to call her, that story.
The sentient shard of it.
Yes, pretty much.
Does she have a name?
Cubic. Corbic.
Kobic.
Yeah. We were getting there.
Yeah. And sort of how the villains want to use her or want to utilize her, mainly Baron Zemo.
Yeah.
Who I will say is a little quippy, but it's...
Yeah, Nick Spencer occasionally, and we like Nick Spencer. He did The Fix, he did Spirit Foes of Spider-Man, he's doing the Captain America that I love, but he does occasionally get a little quippy, and you want Zemo to come off as sort of a haughty German aristocrat.
Yeah.
And he occasionally makes some quips. They're good quips.
They're good quips.
But they don't feel like they should come from Zemo.
Right.
Yes. However,
so editors out there, Marvel editors who might be listening to this podcast, just you can rein that in.
But that said, Zemo's badass in here.
He is.
He's a great bad guy.
He's a force to be reckoned with, as he should be. But honestly, I think what this issue does is Spencer sort of ties the heroes together and forms sort of their bonds again as a family and friends. And I was very appreciative of that and how he handled that. He also introduces a new character, which I won't spoil. It's just fantastic.
No. Yeah, there was a return of a character I was not expecting, and I actually almost had that gasp reaction when I saw it.
It's a great reveal. There's also, you know, forward moving. They do kind of mention Civil War, and they also tie into some of the Thunderbolt stuff that's coming up.
Yeah, so they're definitely leading into other stuff.
Leading
here.
Stuff, but I feel like this is kind of an all encompassing. It was a really good...
Is that Daniel Acuna on art?
Yeah.
Yeah, Daniel Acuna does some of the artwork. Also, forget the other artist's
pretty
name.
Much like anything that guy draws these days.
At this point, yeah.
Yeah, he's good. It's at the very beginning, I think, Nick.
Was it?
Is it not? Okay. I don't know. Anyway.
Anyways, there's another artist on there. I can't find the page that that tells me who it is. But however, I wanted to say, this, I think, really is a good ending to this crossover. This is a lot of fun action, a lot of fun little moments.
This whole thing has been a good... There's the credits page.
Yes.
This whole thing has been just a good Avengers story.
Yeah, it has.
If you're an Avengers fan, and I am very much an Avengers fan, this is basically all the Avengers versus a big supervillain threat that requires them to be there.
Yep. And honestly, there's some things that I just don't want to spoil because I think you but have it, a more fun time.
But it wraps strong. That's the important thing to know, is that it wraps strong.
We've seen several Marvel, some of their bigger ones lately, that have kind of petered out a little bit.
Yep. Endings are hard.
Yeah, it's difficult. What was the last one that they did?
Secret Wars.
We were pretty happy with Secret Wars, too.
But it was dragging a little bit.
Yeah.
It dragged a little bit, but
including it was literally just late.
Yeah.
But I felt Hitman stuck the landing.
Yeah.
But no, I think they stuck the landing here. I feel like Nick Spencer has earned the return of this Captain America, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he writes, what kind of new adventures Steve Rogers get in his adventures.
Yeah.
Because that is also teased here as well. And
yeah.
That is probably some of the most interesting setup.
Yeah. I also, and this is weird because I'm not a big fan of the character, I liked Maria Hill in here.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a Maria Hill fan. I find her really annoying, and I like her in the movies, but I don't like her in the comics. But Spencer made me like her in the comics.
She's a straight-up Bendis character,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, completely.
All right, so Nick, what else you got on your stack?
Oh, okay. So some other stuff that I have in my stack that has not already been mentioned. Most of the... So I have A Year of Marvels number one.
Yeah.
Which is a fun... I haven't had a chance to read it yet.
Is that a maxi series?
It is. It's 12 issues long, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe it is a digital first that is being collected into issues. And, yeah, the concept is... each story takes place in a month tied around a holiday. So,
yeah.
Weirdly, they start with February. I guess January is not a real month in Marvel. And it's a Spider-Man Vulture story set during Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
And then there's an Ant-Man story set on spring break.
Spring break.
Which not officially a holiday, Amy Chu. But
you know, honestly,
they're both fun stories.
Honestly, for Ant-Man, that sounds like a holiday. Yeah.
They're both fun stories. If you're a Spider-Man fan or if you're a fan of the current Ant-Man series, I would definitely give this one a read. It's also notable that they are bringing in creators who either have not worked for Marvel much or are new to Marvel, and I like the new artists they found here.
Yeah, no, I thought both of them were good. Then I have the first issue of the new Darkwing Duck series.
Yep.
I just have a lot of nostalgia for this property.
He is the terror that flaps in the night or something like that.
That is exactly what he is.
I only flipped through that, but I thought the art was a very nice-looking adaptation of the animated style with a little bit of a unique spin on it.
And I think it's faithful to what the cartoon was. So
that's cool.
That's all I really needed.
Looks like a poor man's Chippendale's Rescue Rangers to me.
This is Launchpad McQuack, sir, so...
Yeah, it's true. When are you going to get, what was it, Tailspin? When is Tailspin going to
be? Man, they should bring back Tailspin. Tailspin was great.
I can actually see them doing a great Tailspin.
Well,
comic.
I don't think the Jungle Book has been in the news lately. Oh, wait.
Oh, yeah.
One I haven't gotten to read, but the 51st issue of Batgirl. I was flipping through this. It is not Babs Tarr, but I was very pleased with sort of the art style here.
That's good.
I opened it up and it's like Stephanie Brown and doing fun stuff with Spoiler. And
okay.
I just think this has a really cool look to it. And I'm curious to see how they're going to tie it, because we're coming up on the final issues of a lot of these DC books,
yeah,
to sort of see how it ties in with Rebirth. Speaking of, it's the 51st issue of Batman.
Yep.
And
still
this,
Greg Capullo on art?
This is still Greg Capullo and Scott Snyder. And
oh,
this
okay.
might actually be...
Is that the end of their run, or do they have one more issue?
No, this says end. So
okay.
I'm going to assume...
Okay.
If there's right. another issue, it's some sort of epilogue or
it
somebody
be,
else
but,
doing a handoff or something.
Yeah, but this yeah. feels very much kind of like a finale to,
okay.
to it, which is kind
cool.
of cool. Then I've got the fourth issue of DK3, The Master Race.
Sure.
A little bit delayed, but...
not too bad, all things considered.
And I have one that I know Randy is going to mention, but I'm going to mention it first. Ha ha ha. Miss Marvel number 6, which was a lot of fun.
It's the end of the second story arc
for
the relaunch, and so much fun.
Yeah.
It could potentially have been my pick for the week.
Yep, some great reveals in there. Overall, just as always, that book is one of my favorites. And
yep.
It always makes me laugh.
And has a great little sniffle-inducing sweet ending.
Yeah.
Dave, what else is on your stack?
Let's see. I wanted to mention the Star Wars 18, which continues the sort of prison break storyline going on.
That's been good so far. I'm not a big Lanil Francis Yu fan in general, but I've actually liked his art on this quite a bit.
I've liked it too. And he actually seems to be experimenting with a little bit of a different spin on his style right
yeah.
now. There's Aliens Defiance number one from
yep.
From Dark Horse. This is a based around a colonial marine who's working in like it's a joint salvage operation between the military and the famously corrupt Weyland-Yutani Corporation
yep.
from the Aliens movies.
Yep.
So you got military working with corporate, and of course they are running smack dab into the xenomorphs.
This is Brian Wood writing.
Yeah, Brian Wood is the notable addition to it. Who's done some very good licensed stuff, like with Star Wars and things.
This pretty much seems like what Aliens fans are going to want, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's got the stuff that they like best, which is Colonial
yep.
Marines going up against aliens.
Yep.
Speaking of which, I want to mention there's a Batman collection out this week that is collects the various Batman alien stuff. It's the DC
Yeah, so it's
general.
Batman aliens, Superman aliens, and... Maybe there's something else in there. It's they're doing this.
It's okay. Thick. It's a lot of
so it's Batman Aliens 1 through 2. Oh my gosh,
there's a Wildcat Aliens in here, too.
Batman Aliens 2, number 1 through 3. Superman and Batman versus Aliens and Predator, number 1 and 2. And Wildcat's Aliens, number 1. Wildcat's Aliens is notable, I believe. Is that the one
No, that was Stormwatch.
Stormwatch Aliens is the one that wiped out.
Yeah, where they actually, some of them got killed in there.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you are an, I know today is Aliens Day, by the way, I think, and says Dark Horse probably.
Sure.
So it's indeed, or maybe it's tomorrow. There's cool alien stuff hitting this week. The Injustice series, which we've all enjoyed based on the surprisingly good comics based on the video game series,
yep,
gets a soft cover of Year 3, Volume 2, and a new hardcover of Year 4, Volume 1. And the last thing I wanted to mention was the new Image Plus, is that what it's called?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is essentially whenever we get the big catalog we order from, previews, this is going to come out with it. And it's like an image, it's essentially like an Image magazine.
Right. If you get previews now, when you buy previews, you go get a free copy of Image Previews, yeah, and you get a free copy of Marvel Previews.
Yep.
But you can also buy the Image Previews standalone for, what, $1.99, I think?
Yep, exactly. Now, the biggest thing in here, the one that I think a lot of people are going to flock to it for, is the Walking Dead tie-in.
Yep.
It's got a serialized story that's essentially the origin of the very creepy Negan.
It's called Here's Negan.
Oh, it's actually called that, yep. Yeah.
And it's Kirkman and Adlard. It's continuity stuff. So,
but there are also lots of it's very beautifully done. I have to say,
it's like a little magazine.
Image came out. It came through. No surprise that it would be visually splendid. But there's interviews. There are extended previews of upcoming comics, including a new one from the Scott Pilgrim guy, Brian Lee O'Malley. I don't know who that artist was on it, but it looked really quite stunning.
Yeah.
And lots of other interesting previews in here, too. You know, if you want to get the jump start on all the cool Image stuff that's coming up, you pretty much owe it to yourself to look into this magazine.
Yep.
That's, I think, everything I've got, Randy.
All right. So, other stuff I've got. Spider-Woman number 4. Spider-Women Part 4, which is a crossover between Spider-Gwen, Silk, and Spider-Woman. Spider-Woman Issue 6 is the midway point of that story. This is really good. It involves Jessica Drew meeting her doppelganger on Earth 65, sort of. Uh-huh. I don't want to say too much. Has beautiful art by Joelle Jones. Definitely worth a read. It's one of my favorite books. Another chapter of Amazing Spider-Man, number 11, by Dan Slott and Kim and Coley. The latest issue of Saga, number 36. Latest chapter of Sex Criminals, number 15. The latest issue of Velvet, number 14. That's a lot of my favorite Image books.
I was going to say, that's a trio of really powerhouse Image books.
Yeah, that's a big week for Image books. In collected editions, we've got Brody's Ghost in one big volume. This is a book that we all liked. That is, it's the creator...
Mark Crilley.
And it's basically a sort of slightly futuristic guy who's down his luck. He broke up with his girlfriend. He lives in this sort of futuristic Neo-Tokyo type place. And he meets a ghost who was going to help him defeat a serial killer who may target his girlfriend next.
It's a tribute to the action manga of Japan.
Yeah.
And is a... but with maybe, I'd say, a little bit of American personality to the characters. I really liked it.
And then there's the Gothic Southern romance weird thing, Wet Moon by Sophie Campbell. I read this back in the day when it was first coming out, and I really liked it. I love Campbell's artwork, and I'm glad to see it getting a nice collection. I think a lot of people, especially if you have any goth leanings at all, you may want to give this a shot if you've been enjoying Gem. This is where Campbell sort of made her big break, actually.
And it seems like she's super progressive, transgressive on gender issues throughout, and has a lot of really interesting things to say.
Yeah.
And the art is really, I mean, her art has always been amazing.
And speaking of amazing, segue!
Nice handoff,
Amazing Spider-Man, Brand New Day, Volume 1.
They are
doing the big giant collections, right? The complete collection. So right.
We all know that we didn't like...
We all know no one liked One More Day, except for maybe Joe Quesada, and even him I'm not so sure about anymore.
But the comics that launched out of it by Dan Slott for Spider-Man were quite good, but we were all kind of tentative about them at the time.
Yeah.
So I think this will be an interesting... Will you be kind of revisiting for the first time in a long time?
Yeah, so sort of going back, basically, if you've been enjoying Superior, you've been enjoying Amazing Spider-Man, Dan Slott laid a lot of his groundwork in these stories. Also, it wasn't just Dan Slott. Amazing Spider-Man was bi-weekly, or three times a month. So it was Dan Slott, Mark Guggenheim, Bob Gale, and Zeb Wells writing. Artists include Phil Jimenez, Steve McNiven, Salvador La Roca, Chris Piccolo, Barry Kitson, Marcos Martin, Mike McCone, and Paolo Sequeira.
Those are pretty much all good artists. It's
great art. And, like, Wolverine guest stars. They introduce a new goblin called Menace. They introduce a new hero called Jackpot, who has a mysterious identity. It's a lot of interesting stuff. And also, at the back, there's a, in addition to all the variant covers and stuff they always do, there's a little manifesto that Spider-Man editor Tom Brevoort wrote in September of 2006 that is what we want Spider-Man to be in this brand new day era. And it's a little, like, 4 or 5 page text era.
Yeah, so you
and
can see the philosophy that guided their...
And that's interesting. And then there's the 2008 Bible for Amazing Spider-Man, which has the basics on Spider-Man, Aunt May... his various supporting characters.
It's like a TV show writer's Bible where, you know...
Because there, there were multiple writers working on it.
Right. You don't want to actually have somebody writing Aunt May or whatever out of character.
So everyone from small villains like Screwball and Overdrive, who I've never heard of, to supporting cast members like Carly Cooper and Vin Gonzalez, to big guns like J. Jonah Jameson and Peter Parker and Harry Osborn. It's really interesting stuff. If you have any interest in sort of behind-the-scenes stuff, there's also a drawing of what the coffee bean looks like. Look at the offices of the DB, which is what the Daily Bugle became. This is just an interesting look back at the foundation of what has become a pretty impressive Spider-Man era. And then finally, the absolutely profane, drug-riddled...
Sex and drugs,
Airboy.
Debauchery.
Written by James Robinson with art by Greg Hinkle.
Yeah, his semi-autobiographical fantasy of being drawn into...
James Robinson is basically, he's had alcohol, drug issues, he's divorced from his wife, and he gets assigned by Image to do Airboy, an old pulp adventuring character. And in the course of talking it over with his artist... they meet Airboy, who seems to have come out of his reality to join them in theirs.
And coming from this sort of pure heroic era and confronting two extremely flawed people, especially the writer, is the heart of the series and very much a James Robinson shining a laser-like scalpel or using that to cut into like his own psyche, the creative process, what it's like to make a comic. And even the relationship between the writer and artist and how they might not necessarily get along at all turns.
Yeah. It's really great. It's like I say, it's pretty out there. It is not for kids. Uh-huh. It's not for most adults.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it. And I think Dave, you really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I was surprised at how enjoyable it was.
And it gets a nice...
I did need to take a shower afterwards.
It gets a nice deluxe hardcover here, and I'm definitely picking that up. So, all right. That wraps up our comics for the week. We're going to be back in just a minute to talk about some movies and comedy and TV and games and podcasts and all kinds of stuff. All right, we have a smorgasbord, a buffet, a cornucopia, a...
stuff in the cornucopia.
A variety of topics to cover this week.
Yeah.
So let's start off with the movie that Dave, you and I have seen. Yes. Nick has not had a chance to watch yet.
Right, I think we can discuss it spoilerless.
Well, spoilers, it's about a kid in a jungle.
I mean, I say that, but I've seen The Jungle Book, and unless this is like completely wildly different from the...
Wildly different.
But it is different.
It is. The Jungle Book live action one is totally more like, if anybody's ever read the original Rudyard Kipling stories, where they're kind of like... They have this feeling of like telling, you know, legendary tales. They're not like super comical. There's humor in them, and this one I would say probably has more humor.
Yeah, but they're more boys' adventure. I mean, it's
more adventurous. It's, like I was actually thinking, I was like the real thing this feels like it was competing with in the end was Tarzan.
Yeah, I agree. The funny thing is, I saw someone talk about it, and this one made me want to see it along with all the positive word. But somebody said, "Oh, I didn't realize this was basically just them remaking the animated." For live action, they're like, you know, Bill Murray sings as Blue, sings The Bare Necessities. Christopher Walken as King Louis sings I Want to Be Like You. And while technically that is true, this is in no way a remake of the animated. This is a different version.
Right. In fact, it felt like at least one of those songs that shows up and it felt like, I think, a little forced, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, now, I liked all of them. They were all well done.
Yeah.
But it was just like, it wasn't really a musical.
Yeah.
When those came up, you know, Baloo does seem like the kind of guy who'd be singing a song, you know, sure, while he's going.
That makes absolute sense.
King Louie was a little bit more of a stretch.
Oh, I don't know. King Louie seemed so off. He was very Christopher Walken. He was very much the kind of crazy guy who might just sing a song while he's trying to intimidate right. you.
And of course, it made perfect sense for Ka the Snake, who I actually really
liked.
Did
she really sing? She just kind of used the line. She said, trust in me. But no, she didn't really sing.
She was, I think, singing the lyrics to the song.
Oh, okay. I didn't notice that as much, I guess.
Or maybe, I know that there is, now suddenly I'm not 100% sure, but I know that she did record it I've heard it.
I think it was recorded for audio, but it was not in the movie.
Now, that's possible.
Because here's the thing.
No one will ever know.
I love the Jungle Book animated movie. It's like one of my favorite Disney movies.
Yeah, great.
And so I went into this, I was thinking when they were remaking it, I'm like, I don't really think I need to see this. I've seen this story. Right. And then the buzz was so good that I went and saw it, and I was very happy with it. The kid that got to play Mowgli is fantastic.
Yeah.
Especially when you think how much of him was acting against basically voices and mocap and CGI.
I know. It's like that kid is like the biggest smack in the face to Star Wars prequels I've seen.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't even mean just like Jake Lloyd, but I mean, a lot of those performances were flat.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it wasn't the actor's fault. We know it was George Lucas' direction.
It's not the actor's, and it wasn't that it was against the facts.
I think, who is it, who's the director of this? It's
Jon Favreau.
Jon Favreau, and he brings out that sort of, he directed the first Iron Man?
Directed Elf, he directed Chef.
Yep. Yeah. He is a guy who brings out strong performances in people, and he can certainly do it with special effects.
Yeah.
Iron Man taught us that.
Yep.
The kid does an excellent job, and it is a bit scarier, for sure, than the Disney one.
I could not take my son to this. He would be terrified. The stuff with King Louie is scary.
He is more like some kind of Jurassic Park dinosaur bearing down on you.
Yeah, he's an Australopithecus.
Gigantopithecus.
I know this because it's in the lyrics of the song, love that they found something to rhyme with Gigantopithecus.
Yes. Yeah, they do. That was an addition to it, but I thought it worked very well for this version.
But he's great and scary, and Walken's performance makes him sort of almost like a mafia kingpin guy.
which is
very funny. It's very different from the Louis Prima version.
Yep. You know what's funny is, where he's like a scat man.
Yeah, yeah. he's goofy and he's scary in a different way. He's scary because he's crazy.
Right.
This one is scary because he's a little menacing.
Mm-hmm. You know what's interesting?
It's a little like Walken.
Yeah.
I found out after the fact how much of it was CG. As I was watching it, I mean, I was aware that the creatures were all CG and stuff like that. But I didn't realize maybe how much of the jungle was, that a lot of this was like, there were very few real sets.
Yeah.
I did see some behind the scenes stuff.
A boy on the green screen.
Right. I did see some stuff where, you know, like he was in like, you know, when he was like climbing through some mud, I see the actual kid actor in real mud.
Yeah.
But it's like green screen all around it.
Yeah.
But I will say this, I did not feel it in the movie, and sometimes you really can.
And that's the thing, on top of this being just, it's a good story, all the performances are good, as a technical achievement, it's impressive. Because, like you say, Dave, I mean, you and I think, are always sort of looking at things, we're always sort of aware of, oh, that's probably a CGI. Right. And I was not watching this with that in mind. I was pretty much in the movie the whole time. The characters are very well done.
One of the things, and a weird advantage, is that by having so much CG, it kind of... CG didn't make pop either.
Right, right.
So it sort of felt like this, sort of like you've been transported to this other world that was like a hyper lush jungle.
Yeah.
And where the creatures were a little bit bigger than they were in the real world.
Yeah.
Everybody was really huge. Oh man, and there's also other great voice casting, like Ben Kingsley as Bagheera.
He's fantastic.
Really liked him.
Idris Elba as Shere Khan. Shere Khan, by the way, was scary and really interesting. They made him a little more malevolent and calculating than the one in the movie.
Yep. I actually started rereading a little bit of the some of the book stuff. Mm-hmm. And in the books, he's actually in some ways more pathetic a little bit.
Yeah.
He's actually kind of more of this tiger that's on the outs. He's got like an injured paw and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He's not like a dead... They actually make out like Bagheera is like the deadliest killer in the jungle.
Yeah.
But he is conniving in the books, and he does manipulate people.
Yeah. I have to say... I feel like Bill Murray as Baloo stole the movie. I love Bill Murray as Baloo.
He was very good. I don't know that he necessarily stole it for me, but I thought he did do a great job.
I was so happy with his performance.
Yeah.
He definitely brought a lot of the humor. His sort of beach bum lazy version of Blue is so perfect. It feels like
it's basically what Bill Murray has been half of his career.
Yeah, it was perfect.
Phone it in like you did, like, can say Garfield. Or...
No, but why would you do anything but phone in Garfield? No, I really like this. I will definitely buy it on Blu-ray, and I'm kind of looking forward to seeing the behind the scenes, see how they did it.
It's a must buy for me too.
I'm happy because I was very skeptical that I needed a live action sort of CGI version of this.
I've seen several of the Disney live actiony ones, and. I thought, like, in some ways, I think maybe, like, Cinderella was the weakest, and it was still okay.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
I liked Maleficent.
Yeah.
And there was one other one, I think, I'm forgetting.
They've been doing more of this kind of thing, and in general, they're pretty good.
They're better than I would have thought.
Disney's pretty good at what they do.
Yeah.
I mean, from Disney itself proper to Pixar to Marvel to Star Wars, basically they own everything, and they're very good at what they do.
Just a real quick wrap on the movie, one thing I want to say is, like, there's a nice heartfelt thing going on too, mm-hmm. and a nice through line. It's different enough from the original to throw some surprises your way and have some characters in it that, you know, that were not in the original.
I liked that.
Sometimes just smaller characters, but new roles, new locations and things like that.
Yep.
So you're definitely going to get some neat surprises in it.
Yeah, it is not. I was kind of expecting, I'll know the story. And I did not. I could spot some of the beats, but... It's a good story. If you've liked the previous stuff, you're not going to be like, oh, I've seen all this before.
Yeah.
Well, I tend to like Jon Favreau movies, so.
I was going
to
ask, Favreau has quietly become one of my favorite directors. Like, I really like the stuff that he's done. I mean, Iron Man is a great movie. Elf is a great movie.
Chef is a great movie.
And they're all very different.
I think when he does his mainstream type movies, like, you know, they're different, but, like, broadly speaking, Elf and Jungle Book and even Iron Man are all kind of crowd pleasers.
Yeah.
But he kind of directs a different kind of crowd pleaser. It's usually a little more thoughtful.
Yeah.
You know, the characters.
Chef is very crowd pleasing, too.
Yeah.
Chef. Wait, Chef. I haven't seen Chef.
You should see Chef. It's on Netflix. Yeah, it's right. Good.
It's a very easygoing movie, but it's fun to watch.
The other thing Favreau does that I like, his movies tend to sort of be a lighthearted optimistic.
Yeah.
Like, there's darkness in them. Like, you know, the guy in Chef, he's kind of a bad dad at times, but it's almost like a Disney version of a bad dad. Yeah. It's like everything's going to work out in the end in a Jon Favreau movie.
Right. Yeah.
And it's kind of an old school Hollywood throwback thing that I kind of like.
Well, that makes sense because, you know, Elf was a throwback to these sort of heartfelt Christmas specials of my youth and stuff like that, where it was not, you know, there might be some modern humor, but it wasn't, there was by no means, in the end, you were not going to walk out jaded. It was supposed to make you feel kind of optimistic.
And kind of connecting this, didn't they just announce that Favreau was coming back on?
He's coming back on the Marvel Universe.
Marvel Universe.
At least in a producer role,
he's
right?
He's executive producing the Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah,
so.
Which is cool. Interesting. Now, have you guys seen Zathura?
Yes, actually, I did.
Because that's sort of like Jumanji in space, right?
And it was a lot of fun.
I need to see that, because I've realized that Favreau's a guy I like a lot. And
I like the Jumanji concept, that it works sort of in two kids finding a game that takes them into space.
Yeah.
I have not seen that or Zathura, but that reminds me of the kind of movies I liked as a kid. When I was watching, like... Goonies and stuff like that. Any kind of like good kids adventure movies are not always easy to find, and that's kind of cool.
Nick, instead of catching the Jungle Book, you were doing something else.
Yes, is this the catch up?
Yeah, you were talking about catching up.
Oh yeah. Well, my wife, I was all super excited that the new Game of Thrones season was starting, and she was complaining that she wanted to watch it, and but. She had watched the first season long ago, like when it originally aired, and she was like, I fell off of that. I didn't re-up on HBO.
Right.
So she wanted to do a catch-up. So we started watching over the weekend season one again.
Yeah.
And we're about five episodes in,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen all of this stuff before, in some cases multiple times, because I've watched, I picked them up a while back and watched them again. And,
yeah.
But it's so interesting, and you can just sort of watch it on multiple levels of just like, okay, I've seen this, but I haven't really paid attention to the backgrounds and the sets and the costuming.
And it's different when you know where they're going.
And different when you know where you're going. And they do throw a lot at you early on. They're like, it's a smart show. They expect you to know and catch up on things and catch little hints they throw out there and... it's funny to sort of see the story arcs, because I know that are coming, but my wife is like, man, I hate Jamie Lannister. I'm like,
yep.
Yeah, you do. But Jamie, wait.
That's one thing that George R. R. Martin and then Benioff and Weiss, who run the show, have been very good about, is they are able to give you shades of gray to even the worst villains.
Yeah.
And okay, maybe except for one of the worst villains. I think I don't think he's ever. I don't think Joffrey's ever likable. I don't think you ever care about him.
No, I mean even in I think it's in the second episode where they're heading back for, to King's Landing.
Yeah.
From coming from Winterfell.
Yeah.
And the whole Cook's kid and yeah. you know basically Joffrey trying to woo a little bit of Sansa.
Yeah.
And you know that whole thing ensues, and which ends up getting Lady killed, one of the dire
yeah.
wolves.
Yep.
My wife had a really hard time watching.
Yeah, they are not. They will kill anyone in this show.
And
yeah.
anything.
I guess that's probably. By the way, that was probably a mark of you know in movies you try not to kill the dog.
Right.
When they did that early on in yeah. Game of Thrones, they're like, so here's where we're coming from.
Yeah, yeah, well, I think you're right.
And it's a really powerful scene because Sean Bean is you know, he's asking the king, is like, is this your command? Is this what you want me to do?
Yeah.
Because it's not even the dog that bit Joffrey.
Right.
Right.
It Arwen's.
It's revenge by proxy.
Yeah, it's revenge by proxy. Arius. And it's mean.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's all because Cersei wants justice in
yep.
her perverted sort of way.
Yep.
And it's Cersei is still one of those characters that I still hate.
I've come around to finding there's some elements of Cersei that I actually relate to at this point. I'm like,
I'm
you know what?
Not as far along as y'all, but yeah. as far as
at
some point, somewhere I guess maybe in season two when she's talking to who is it? Maybe
is it Sansa?
It must be
yeah.
Sansa
during the siege.
Yep.
Yeah.
During the siege, yeah. I started thinking about her in a somewhat different light when she's talking about what she will. The link she will go to for her children.
That's what Cersei's. I mean, Cersei's a viper, and she's a dangerous person, and she's mean and cruel and that kind of thing. And a lot of that comes from her father.
Yeah.
But the one thing you can always say about Cersei, you have to give her, is that she loves her children like nothing else.
Yeah.
It's like almost a mafia level kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like mafia people can do terrible things, but sometimes family is super important.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I will say, even in the first few episodes, they do give her the scene where she and. She's in the room where Bran is
yeah.
basically still recovering.
Yeah.
And she's telling Catelyn the story of losing her first child, who was
yeah.
actually the king's son.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's a really heartfelt scene. And I, you know, I do feel for her.
Yeah.
But it's like, you're in this room with a kid you tried to kill.
Yeah, but that's where Cersei comes from. Cersei will do anything to protect her kids,
yeah.
including murdering any of yours.
Yeah, I mean, she's...
Without a second thought.
I mean, your you know, definition of her as a viper is about
yeah.
perfect.
And that's... I mean, Lena Headey's amazing in that role.
But,
the casting on this show throughout has been good. I've got all of this on stuff on Blu-ray, and of
yeah.
course I've got HBO now, but I really want to go back and rewatch. I just don't have time.
One of the scenes that I was really kind of thrown by, because I'd forgotten it completely, is the first...
You know, I've been looking to do a rewatch, by the way, and I may... key off of yours, Nick, and,
yeah.
so I can chat with you about it as I go through.
It's the first jousting match they show in honor to Ned.
Yep.
And it's between the Mountain, which
yep.
the original Mountain, not the second Mountain.
And Sir Loras.
And I'm like, and I was telling my wife, is like, that's the guy who's going to play Iron Fist.
Yep.
And,
oh, yeah.
you know, and then, of course, when the Mountain loses, he goes insane.
And chops a horse in half.
Chops a horse in half, and then tries to kill Sir Loras.
Yeah.
And the Hound steps in.
Yeah.
Because they're brothers.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, these are really good scenes. These are
yeah.
great.
Oh, yeah.
yeah.
George R. R. Martin and, of course, the people who adapt the show can really weave an intense scene.
Yeah.
Like, there's no boring scenes, really.
Yeah.
No.
Even quieter scenes have sort of sometimes a quiet intensity or provide a little bit of the heart beneath, you know, because there's so much acid and,
yeah.
and vengeance and stuff like that
yeah.
at other times.
Dave, I can't wait for you to catch up on this because I believe yeah. as it goes on, they really do take advantage of having built up all these characters and they keep adding and keep adding. And there's so much that goes on. There's such a history to just even, you know, five seasons of this show.
And I'm going to be, you know, mocked or yelled at for saying it, but the show is superior to me.
I agree, and there are definitely, I've seen a lot of people on my Facebook feed who really do not like the show. They don't like that they've cut out some things from the books. I got tired of the books. I'm not sure I care if they ever finish. I love the show.
Yeah, and I think that has to do with not only the people writing it,
yeah.
but it's the actors and their performances,
yes.
and
yeah.
sort of the life that they've imbued into the characters, whereas sometimes on the page they don't feel as well lived in or,
yeah.
you know, as bright.
Well, and Martin definitely had a tendency to keep expanding
yeah.
when he probably should have started contracting.
That fourth book really destroyed my kind of willpower when it basically diverged from everything that we've
yeah.
known to people that while interesting, I wasn't as invested in. And yeah. Kind of like, okay,
You know, writers, that seems to happen a lot with fantasy sagas.
Yeah.
I think they get tired of living in the headspace of those characters.
Yeah.
And they're like, I need something new. And then they do it, and the reader's like, who the crap are these
people? Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like, it'd be one thing if he was putting out a book a year.
Yeah.
And then you can give me a book that's like about a bunch of other characters. That's great. That's interesting.
But a book every 7 years?
At the best. Yeah. I'm like, so I'm not going to see Tyrion for 15 years? That's no good.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But you watched the premiere.
I watched the premiere, which was really good. And some people are down on it because they've been doing some stuff in Dorne that people aren't liking. They're definitely very much off Martin because they're beyond the books at this point.
Yeah.
But I loved every minute of it.
Well, I love Dorne. Dorne's an interesting place.
Yeah.
And that's where... No, I'm misthinking, because I was thinking of Braavos.
No, they jump around in pretty much everything. There's a lot of stuff I'm really liking, and I'm excited to have the show back. So.
Cool.
Speaking of catch up, though, Dave, Nick, you are also catching up on another show that we all love.
Yeah.
That I wish I had time to rewatch.
Yes, and this one was just kind of happenstance. I looked at my phone, and I'd listened to all the podcasts that I had.
How do you even do that?
I don't have as many as you do. I mean, I just have some of the fiction ones, the Black Tapes and Alice Isn't Dead. And every once in a while, if I have a car ride, I'm like, I'll look at the top 100 on Apple and just see what's there. Most of the time, I don't find anything. But I found one called The West Wing Weekly, which is a podcast between Joshua Malina, who was on the show from like the fourth season. That's sort of where he is. And then another guy, which I'm going to butcher his first name because, my God, I can't pronounce it, but it's Hrishikesh Hirway.
Okay.
And he does another podcast called Song Exploder, which sort of sees a song and they take it, you know...
They basically look at the lyrics,
look at how you do it.
I need to look into that.
And it's an interesting one. The first one they did was... I'm blanking on... that's me. But go listen to it. It's very interesting. But, yeah, no, they're looking at this West Wing podcast of going over every single episode of the series.
Oh, wow.
That's
a tall order.
And it's kind of cool because the first couple of episodes were just them talking about it and sort of analyzing the pilot, which was fun to listen to, and sort of how... because when it aired in 99, I was not, plugged into the sort of ratings or reviews or anything like that. I was just watching television to watch television.
Right.
And kind of, they went back and they were like, yeah, a lot of places gave it like a D, it wasn't anything, and, it was kind of interesting to hear that stuff, but as the series has progressed, and they're only 5 episodes in, they've gotten a couple people to come in on the podcast from the show, so they've had Dulé Hill, which was really interesting to sort of hear him talk about his experiences on set, sort of, this was his big... first big break in a lot of ways. I mean, and he's gone on to do a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
And they've had... I'm going to blank on his name, but he was one of the writers or big speech writers for Al Gore who came in on, I think, season 4 or 5. I think it was probably 4. But to sort of as one of the writers and sort of to hear him talk about kind of the behind the scenes, talking with the writer's room and about Aaron Sorkin, who is a guy who has always interested me, or I've always been interested in him. And then I know in the upcoming episode, they're going to have Janelle Maloney on it, which I'm excited to hear because her character Donna is always just hilarious to me, especially in those early seasons.
Yep.
But it's just kind of fun to hear this kind of behind-the-scenes access of not only Joshua Malina, because he was on the show and he got to work with all, like, Bradley Whitford and, Martin Sheen. It was just kind of... it's a very cool kind of reminiscence of all the episodes of the show, sort of the ups and downs, the episodes that are amazing, and the episodes are just kind of there. And they are very representative of, like, yeah, no, that wasn't the greatest episode. It kind of sucked, and... maybe he didn't treat the women in the show all that well or all of this. But then they talk about the big stuff and the stuff they get right. And I think it's just a really interesting experience to listen to.
Yeah.
So it's not just slavish devotion, though.
No, I mean, no, it's not
they're
slavish
fans,
devotion.
But they're not
big
slavish
fans of
fans.
Aaron Sorkin. And I mean, and obviously big fans of the show, especially for Joshua Malina to be on there. It was kind of funny. He is on their Shonda Rhimes show right now. He's on the...
How to Get Away with Murder?
No, the other one. One of the other Scandal. And his character's name is actually a callback to The West Wing.
Oh.
His name is David Rosen, which was the guy that they were going to get instead of Toby. Which is kind of... Shonda Rhimes went on record on the podcast saying that she loved The West Wing at that so much that she named a character
after. That makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember. Some friend of mine on Facebook, I think, just said the other day that they fell down the YouTube well of watching West Wing videos.
Yeah.
And suddenly, like, you know, it was an hour later and they had watched all these videos. Yeah. And I've done that exact same thing.
Yeah.
Because West Wing has so many great scenes. You watch one, start checking out the stuff on the side, and you're like, all right,
yeah,
I got to see that.
They're going to have a reunion for West Wing at the ATX Fest this year.
Man.
Aaron Sorkin, Tommy Schlamme, Janelle Maloney, Bradley Whitford. I forget who all else is going to be. Joshua Molina. So I guess I need to maybe... I didn't know we're only five episodes in. I may start listening to this podcast.
Yeah, and they actually... Some are pretty brief. Some are 20 minutes. But yeah. Some of the ones when they have the guests, when they do go on a little bit longer, about 45 to 50 minutes. Yeah. And I never feel bored. I'm always entertained.
Relatively brisk podcast, not like ours.
Our podcast I like to think of as 3 30-minute parts.
Oh, okay.
That's, I think, the way I've always pitched.
A giant feast.
That's also possible.
In which people gorge themselves on pop culture.
I definitely recommend the Westman Weekly. And also, I'm going to delve more into Song Exploder because I don't know much about music.
That sounds like a cool way to analyze songs.
Yeah.
Well, I've got 5 episodes of Junk Food Cinema on my iPod, so why not add 2 more podcasts?
I just remembered the first one is all about the lead singer of Weezer. Yeah. And sort of the way
River
Cuomo, and sort of how he came up with one of the new songs for the new album that just hit in 2016. Mm-hmm. So,
Dave, you also have been catching up on a show.
What am I catching up on?
11/22/63.
Oh, right. Yeah, I actually had a periodic. Every once in a while, I actually complete something on the TV world.
Madness.
And this one was a nice brief eight episode miniseries. We talked about it before. This, you know, based on the Stephen King novel of the same name. About a guy who, through kind of a more mysterious time travel than you usually get, is almost a little arcane, almost slightly mystic vibe to it.
I believe they call it the rabbit hole, something like that, Stephen King?
I don't remember.
I think that's what Stephen King called it in interviews. I don't know if that's...
Yeah, I mean, and that makes sense. Is able to slip from modern times back into the year 1960?
Yeah.
Is it?
It's a certain date in 1960. If you go through this portal that's in the back of a diner,
yep,
you will always wind up at this day in 1960.
The actor Chris Cooper is a diner owner who knows about it and has been trying to go back and basically feeling like modern times clearly show a decline that could have been averted had JFK been saved.
Yeah.
He has been trying to avert it. But as you learn very quickly in the series, history, time pushes back in these really, really dangerous and violent ways sometimes. Mm-hmm. In small ways, it could bend things so that, like, if you're trying to get somewhere in your car, your battery might die on you or something like that. But it happens in bigger ways, too, and stuff that does feel almost supernatural, you know? And, in fact, during the course of making several trips back to try and change it and failing in various ways... He contracted cancer, and so he's dying, and he sort of hands off his mission to James Franco, who I really like in the lead role.
Who is a teacher, school teacher?
Yeah, he's a teacher, very, very empathetic, but a guy who's going to have his kind of, like, generally kind of pacifistic demeanor put to the test as he has to go into almost like sort of a very, almost military planning, but also he has to wait out 3 years as this approaches, see if he can root out potentially, you know, the conspiracy behind it, whether there was a conspiracy, try and get close to big players like especially Lee Harvey Oswald and anybody who might have been associated with him. He's got to stay in secret, but at the same time, he's a normal guy who ends up falling in love.
Yep.
You know, he ends up trying to almost when he thinks his mission might be blown, he tries to save another life that he assumes something else he knows is going to happen. He has to take risks like doing some high stakes gambling to make money. He's got a book of sports winners and stuff like that, so he can do it.
Yep.
And he ends up inadvertently bringing in an accomplice along the way. Actually, maybe one or two accomplices. I really like this. I have a fondness for Stephen King and his sort of well drawn characters, and some of the smaller characters, like Randy, you know, the dude who was like the principal, I guess, at the school.
Yeah, he's played by, from Justified, Art, who plays Art in Justified.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about.
I do. I can't.
Yeah, the older guy. He's got a J.K. Simmons vibe about him a little bit. Yeah. He's great.
He seemed sort of like adversarial at first and almost a little bit like, this is one of the guys you're going to have to watch out for as to like keep your secret and stuff.
Yep.
But then you kind of, he's basically one of these kind of small town good people. And he ends up being an ally in a lot of things, even though I don't think he ever knows what the
big picture
is. Fully go
what's going on, but he knows that Jake is a good guy.
There are some King-isms, I guess I'd say.
Yeah.
The sort of vengeful husband, I feel like, of the girl he falls for.
Yeah.
His particular pathology seems like a Stephen King character.
Yeah.
A little bit unrealistic, but still watchably creepy.
Yeah.
And he was very creepy.
Yeah.
King usually likes his evil characters to be evil.
He does. He does.
There's also
on the nose.
King also definitely has a nostalgia for a simpler time, and that definitely plays into this. And at the same time, whenever I hear someone have nostalgia for a simpler time, I'm always like, do you mean you want to go back to being racist and sexist?
But he
goes out of his way to not do that, which I appreciate.
Very specifically, James Franco, who's used to living in a pretty relaxed and integrated society, even though we're still fractious.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, somebody asks, or like, he directs like a black woman to, or somebody to the restroom.
Yeah.
And they're like, you're not going in there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, the black restrooms are over here, or whatever. And there's any number of incidents like that. There's actually a kind of cathartic one where...
The gas station?
Yeah, it was Miss Mimi, who's the secretary at the school, and a really strong supporting character in the series. And she's black. Her car broke down, and she, like, hiked, like, 5 miles or whatever to get to a gas station and went, just get some gas?
And the guy won't serve her, but Jake is there to sort of help. And
he dresses that guy down hardcore.
What's interesting about that is that Mimi is sort of uncomfortable with it.
Right. It's just not done in that area. Yeah. You don't stand up for somebody in that violent sort of way.
Yeah.
Over that, you know, a white person doesn't do that, and so she's in an awkward spot.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of the superhero vibe as he has to keep his secret from people, and he has to decide when not to at times. I would say it's not quite a perfect thing, but it was one of those things that I felt compelled throughout and never knew quite where it was going to go.
Yeah.
And it has some neat twists and turns in the last few episodes, so. They're very, very suspenseful. And I like James Franco throughout. I think he's I think he's really gifted. So I'm going to say people definitely check it out, whether you're a King fan, a James Franco fan, or just want a good suspenseful 8 hours spent around kind of an unusual time travel story.
So I went to the Moon Tower Comedy Festival this weekend.
Right.
Second year in a row. This is a great festival. If not for ATX Fest, it'd probably be my favorite thing in Austin. Well, in Staple. It's one of my favorite things to do in Austin.
Yeah.
But basically, I got a badge. I had a press badge because of my work on the TV Dudes. And so I got to basically go to a bunch of shows. I got to see David Cross taped his new HBO special.
Oh.
Which
it was actually the taped one?
Yes.
Nice.
So he did two performances. I saw the earlier one.
I've never been to a taped one.
It's pretty much the same. But he's really funny.
Well, that means that when people watch the special and they pan out across the audience, they might see you.
Unless they look really far in the balcony, they're not going to see me.
It's completely different.
I did not get the greatest seats, but they were good enough. And David Cross puts on a great show, especially if you like his particular brand of atheist liberal firebrand comedy, which I liked.
Yeah.
One of my buddies
used some good acerbic venom.
One of my buddies who writes for the Statesman, he said he liked the first half of the show. The second half, where he was sort of doing sort of darker preaching to the converted kind of stuff, he found a little bit self-indulgent and not that funny. I thought it was hysterical, but that might just be because I'm a bad person.
Sometimes if you're among the converted, it likes to be preached to.
But it was really funny.
The only kind of preaching you'll like.
I also saw a couple of shows that were about 10 episodes or 10 comedians doing various shows, doing like 7-10 minutes a piece. And that included, like, Jessica Williams from The Daily Show, a drop-in set by Saturday Night Live's Leslie Jones, who, by the way, I would not want to be sitting next to that woman on an airplane. She's crazy, and she's so in your face and so full of energy and such a physical comedian, too. She's amazing, and I don't watch Saturday Night Live, so all I knew of her is from the Ghostbusters trailer.
Yeah.
And now having seen her comedy, I'm like, oh, wow, she is going to be huge, because she was great. As well as there was a British comedian. Go to YouTube and look up Piff the Magic Dragon.
Uh-huh.
He's sort of a magician. I think Penn and Teller called him out as like being a good magician, but also a good performer.
Okay.
He comes up. He's got sort of this weird, world-weary British effect. Okay. He's in a dragon costume, an ill-fitting dragon costume. He has a, not a poodle, but a chihuahua with him, also in a dragon costume. And he does
One of the weirder setups I've ever heard.
He does card tricks. He's sort of blisteringly disinterested in the audience. It was hilarious. One of my favorite shows that I saw.
Ah, I gotta check.
So definitely go check out Pith the Magic Dragon. I'll try and remember to put some links in the show notes. That was really good. There were any number of good sort of smaller comedians that I saw. But the other one, the one I really want to talk about, last night at the festival, last show I saw was Hasan Minhaj from The Daily Show. Mm-hmm. He was at the Google Fiber space, which is a really neat little space, has video screens up behind him. And he did what was essentially like a one-man show if one-man shows didn't suck. He basically goes through being how his dad sort of went up to the most beautiful woman in their village, said, "Hey, I'm a chemist. I'm going to America. I want to marry your daughter," and basically made that happen. And then she was in India while waiting for her visa, while he was working as a chemist in America, and Hasan was the single dad to Hasan, and he talks about sort of what it's like being a Muslim Indian. And how strict his dad was and sort of trying to assimilate into American culture, but also keep his culture. Uh-huh. And he talks about things like having his sister come over who was basically didn't speak the language and was like 6 or 8 years old and he'd never heard of her before. Mm-hmm. And suddenly he's got to be sort of her keeper and how much he resented that and how that affected their relationship and how his first sort of relationship with a white girl was sort of tinged with racism and they're going to prom and that kind of stuff and getting the job of The Daily Show. And basically it's sort of a trip through his life as a Indian Muslim Indian American and a comedian.
Uh-huh.
And it was hilariously funny, but also really sweet and touching. It was a hell of a thing. I was very impressed with this.
How long was it?
It was about an hour, hour and a half.
Okay.
And just really, really great. If you've seen Minhaj on The Daily Show, you know that he's a really funny guy, but this was a side of him I had not seen, and I was just blown away by it.
Wow.
It's really, really good. If you get a chance to see the show while it's touring around, definitely go see that show. I don't know if they'll ever do a special or anything like that. I hope they do, because it was pretty fantastic.
Hmm.
But yeah, so that was really great. Dave, while I was at Moon Tower Comedy, or after I'd gotten back, you were running The Warren.
Oh, right. So this is an indie RPG that... It's basically, if you've ever seen Watership Down, the movie, or read the book that it's based on, this is Watership Down, the game, the RPG.
Yeah.
Players are rabbits in it, in mm-hmm. a dangerous world where basically everything is hunting you. You're at the bottom of the food chain, but you are still adventurous, clever rabbits who hopefully will be able to get out of things without taking too much damage. This is a game that has a tracks your panic level.
Yeah.
Anything that remotely threatening comes up, you make a roll to see if you can kind of maintain it. It's almost like sanity in Call of Cthulhu.
Okay.
And if you can have rabbits that are a little more grounded and steady and ones that are less... But when something happens, there's a reasonable chance it's going to start raising this level up. And if it goes past a certain threshold, then you basically, you're like in the hands of the GM.
Okay.
You're going to either run, or you're going to fight, or you're just going to freeze up.
Okay.
In panic. And sort of the adventure proceeds from there. I was running a not super deadly game, but a game where some violence did happen. My quartet of rabbit characters yep. were in a park. Which they called the Green. We sort of built up a little bit of our own mythology, the way Watership Down does.
Yeah.
Surrounded by the city, which they call the Gray, and is very much a forbidden no man's land. And, they had to deal with sort of a potentially haunted portion of their warren, which, right. because it's realistic, this actually turned out to be a possum that had an injured possum trapped down there. But
yeah.
they had to fend off rats that were attacking. They befriended the possum. At one point, on their sort of larger quest to sneak into a zoo to get some food that they needed, they ran across some drunken humans in the park. One of whom threw a bottle at them.
Yeah.
And bonked one of the characters and injured them kind of badly.
Oh.
So there's a little bit of that Watership Down surprising violence at
yeah.
times.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a game for kids, even though you're playing rabbits.
Yeah.
But they did. My players did a really good job. Their friendship with the possums ended up becoming a bit major. Major thing during it and help them survive the sort of final portion of the quest. And it was a fun one-night adventure. So this is something that we carry at the store, by the way.
Yeah.
It's a little small indie RPG, probably 15 or 20 bucks or something like that.
Yep.
And I would recommend it. Oh, I forgot to say, it uses the Apocalypse World system, which is also Dungeon World.
Sure.
You roll two dice, and you generally you find what move it corresponds with, and you check the results. It's kind of a little improvisational, you know. The DM doesn't roll anything at all.
Right.
You sort of take actions when they have failed rolls and stuff like that. And then you do a little bit of improv style where if they can succeed but something.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Then the DM has broad powers at that point to kind of choose which direction the story goes. But I was quite happy with it and kind of want to develop this world and do some more with it.
Cool. All right, well, that about wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. And come out for International Tabletop Day this weekend.
Yeah.
And make sure and put Free Comic Book Day on your calendar for next weekend.
That's right.
Yes, tell all your friends and your enemies and people on the street.
And your frenemies.
And your frenemies. And until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.